White Walker perpetuated offenses are considered especially heinous. In Westeros, four dedicated friends investigate and discuss these vicious episodes as members of an elite squad known as A Podcast Has No Name.
Welcome to A Podcast Has No Name. This is DJ Ambush, one-fourth of the team, and I'm sitting down here with a couple of guests that have returned from some previous episodes, and I'm looking forward to having even more discussions with them after this. As we discuss the Snyder Cut, I'm sitting down here with Ibrahim and Andre Cole. What's going on, fellas?
Yo, what's going on? What's crack-a-lakum salam?
Hey!
I love that.
Yeah. When I saw it in the text, I was like, this is what I'm talking about. So it's been a busy week. Snyder Cut dropped. Also, The Count. Count dropped. Your book dropped, Ibrahim. Did you plan that?
No, man. It was actually supposed to come out in September, but then COVID delayed everything. So then it came out March instead. So
you were supposed to come out in September. COVID delayed it like everything else. You called Zach and was like, look, I got this thing going on. You got your thing going on. Let's drop it same week.
Yeah, I said, let me come out first, though, because I don't want to overshadow too much, you know. What you got going on?
Oh my god! Okay, so
first, give him some time. Let's kind of get some light, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
I get you.
So, first question: were you guys part of the Twitter campaign rooting for the Snyder Cut?
Go ahead, Andre.
I was not a part of the Twitter campaign.
Okay,
rooting for the Snyder Cut. Want me to go into it even more?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. So I wasn't part of the Snyder Cut Twitter campaign at all. And I thought that he should get his shot. I mean, I thought it'd been cool if he got his shot or we see what was going to happen. But I think I said on the last time I was on the pod, I also had tweeted something that the fanboys jumped on me. I tweeted about the original Justice League and I got jumped.
What happened?
And basically what I said was, to paraphrase, I said, I can tell no black people were involved in the editing of this film because they left in Cyborg saying booyah.
I remember.
And people jumped me. They were like, you don't understand Teen Titans. You don't know. And I was like, no, I got it.
I get it.
it was a bad choice. It was a bad decision on my part. I think that they just made a bad choice. It wasn't delivered well. I didn't think it was good. And of course, now with the Snyder Cut is out, it's not there. Aha, fanboy. I told you that was a Whedon cut thing. Ha.
Were you rooting for it? Were you rooting for the Snyder Cut?
I was not publicly involved with any of the... I did not have Twitter relations with that movie. I mean, I wanted to see it, you know, I'm like, and it was kind of frustrating because, you know, that movement online had, I think, two factions to it. There were people who were just kind of the genuine devoted fans of his film universe who just really wanted to see his take on it, come to fruition. And then there was the toxic part of that fan base, would you have with any fan base?
Sure.
And unfortunately, those are usually the louder voices, right? There was a lot of overlapping, you know, concentric circles with sort of comic book based hate group that's out there, right? So I kept my thoughts on it quiet because I was like, I'm not trying to, you know, I don't want to get swept up in it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I, you know, look, if you're telling me there's potentially more of a Justice League movie out there, like, of course I want to see it. And I think that's kind of an annoying thing about the whole polarization of the Snyder Cut is like what you have is a bunch of people who either really want to see it or people who like to just drag his movies and his particular version of the DC universe. And now they're at this kind of funny full circle point where they're like, because Joss Whedon is embroiled in his own controversy, you know, with the allegations against him being like a sexist and a racist and things like that. Now that those people can be like, well, you know, I'm glad the Snyder Cut was better than Joss Whedon's version. And it's like, you didn't want to see it, you know what I mean?
Right.
But it was a weird thing for me because, so look, Superman is my, it's my favorite fictional character.
Right.
The whole reason I got into making comics as a profession is because my love of Superman my whole life. And I loved Man of Steel.
It was incredible.
Well, I loved it till about an hour in.
What happened?
And then they destroyed his hometown. And then he was making out with Lois on like the bones of Metropolis. And I was like, and then he killed the bad guy. And I was like, what is this? And I was heartbroken. And then Batman vs. Superman came out and I said, I'll give it a shot. And I saw it in the theater and I never watched it again. It was absolutely terrible. Right. Then what happened was I started to get really into action figures and customizing action figures. And there are some really great figures based on the DCEU. Right.
Okay.
So that kind of made me go, you know what, let me give this another shot. And I watched the cause I think Man of Steel is a good movie. Like, you know, objectively, it's a great movie, but it's just not the depiction of Superman I wanted, right?
Makes sense. Yeah.
Then I watched the extended version of BVS and I said, okay, it's not what I want, but it's a much better movie. It's coherent, like, as opposed to the theatrical one, which had a lot of holes in it. So then by then I was like, and, you know, I was actually with the Whedon cut, I was satisfied enough. Like, I looked at it like, all right, it's got huge, huge problems, right? But if I look at this through the lens of like a Bruce Timm Justice League cartoon three-part episode story with live action, like it's all right, you know, and there's going to be more. So it's whatever, you know what I mean? In my lifetime, we'll see more Justice League. We'll see more Superman. So I came at peace with it. And that is why when the prospect of a Snyder cut of the Justice League was on the table, I was like, you know what? It's not my version of it, but I'll see what this man, you know, I'll let him finish his story.
Right. Right. I just hearing, so I was a fan of Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. I enjoyed the whole Martha thing was like, okay, guys, just chill out. Like the public outcry.
Yeah.
It was just like, all right, whatever. So when I heard inklings of this, it was like, oh, well. All right, let's see what you got. Let's see what you got. Because I wasn't completely satisfied with the first cut of Justice League, like everyone else. I enjoyed it. I'd watch it over and over again, just have it playing in the background while I'm doing some stuff. I'm still coming from that same area of having played with these figures in my childhood, so it's the same thing. Any of these movies, it could be Ninja Turtles, it could be Transformers. These are toys that I had to animate myself when I wanted to do live action shit with them. So there's a part of me, a great part of me, that is just excited to see the costumes done right, the special effects done right, the casting is done well. Then it's like, okay, so what's the story you got for me? Could have been better. But Wonder Woman can fight her ass off. Like, so there's things just like, you know.
Right.
Again, I'm not looking for Martin Scorsese's Justice League. I'm not looking for that. Can the story make sense? Cool, because there were a lot of things that just didn't make sense in the comics, in the cartoons. So why do I have these high expectations now that it's on film? It's still a comic book movie. Wonder Woman is fighting in wedges. It's still a comic book movie. All right. So, right. You know. But yeah, overall, I was definitely part of the Twitter campaign. You can check. I was out there. I was mixing it up. I was arguing with Castro and other members. Yeah, we were out there. We were getting
Were you one of the people that jumped me?
No.
Did you jump me from like a fake Twitter? Was that you?
Moving on. No, but I do remember me and you discussing the booyah, and I was like,
right.
But you were like, they didn't need it. And I was like, you're right. They didn't need it. But when it happened, I was like, okay, I see what you guys are doing here. But no, as we can tell, no, it was completely unnecessary. I'm glad they did remove it. I'm glad they removed a lot of different joints, which we will get to. So first question, what are your two favorite character upgrades between the original cut and this one, the Snyder cut?
My two character upgrades have to be Cyborg and I think. I kind of jostle between Flash and Cyborg's father. I kind of go between those two. I'm not kind of quite sure because I think they could have done more with Flash. It's kind of weird. Like, they could have done more with Flash just as Flash.
Yeah.
And I just like the fact that they kind of gave Cyborg's father, sorry, I don't remember his name. Mm-hmm. He's Joe Morgan. He's always going to be Papa Pope to me.
Right.
From now on.
Absolutely.
but I really like the fact that they gave him like science. They gave him like a real purpose. In this, in the Snyder Cut, he actually has like a real purpose. Like he's really doing stuff. He really like he's a full fledged human being, I think, in this cut. And so I appreciated that. I think, you know, giving Cyborg, you know, just kind of playing, giving him his story and kind of making, I don't know if he's center, but he's just left of center of the story. You kind of understand what the mess was that was in the Whedon. I mean, the Whedon, I'm gonna call it the Whedon cut. In the original cut, there was the mess that was Cyborg in the first film, the first version. It kind of filters and they kind of give you, oh, okay, this is what this was. And, you know, this is how he's really feeling. And he wasn't just surly all the time. And, you know, he had a reason for this and you knew the reason, but I think the development of his character helped the film overall.
Oh yeah, I agree. And I agree with you with Silas Stone. Like he comes across as a fully capable scientist, leader in this field versus Frankenstein, you know, that did some shit with his son and this is what we got, a cyborg, you know what I'm saying? Like his character was definitely more realized. Ibrahim, who were your top two favorite characters that were developed in this upgrade?
Definitely Cyborg. In fact, one of my main issues with the movie is that I think that, you know, I know they have an ensemble cast they have to deal with, but I think that Cyborg should have been our like way in character, right? Like and I feel like they kind of just made him a little bit more of like another one of the characters, right? But it's like, he's brand new to this. He's just learning about his abilities, right? Like, so I think if he was our focal point a little bit more, I think the movie would have felt more cohesive to me. But like, man, I'm gonna feel kind of silly saying this, but like when he was discovering his abilities, and first of all, there was that beautiful parallel between Man of Steel when he's playing the cassette from his father.
Yeah.
And it's got the voiceover of his father as he's learning to fly for the first time. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, that was done well.
But when he's watching the security footage and he's kind of living in that digital realm and he is, you know, watching that waitress and makes her stack of money go up.
Yeah,
man, I shed a tear. Like that really got me, because the first thing he did when he learned what he could do was help somebody.
Yep.
Right.
And to me, I was like, that's what these heroes should be doing on screen. You know what I mean? Not beating the shit out of each other. and then I got it. My second one has to be Superman. Like, I mean, rubber lip stuff aside, like there was just more. There was more context to even bringing him back. You know, they talked about how the mother box was a change machine and how it, you know, the reasoning and the logic behind being able to bring Superman back in this version was there, whereas it wasn't before. It was just like, what if we just did a surge of energy in this amniotic fluid in the ship?
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, so, and I thought it was cool how they tied the whole thing to Superman, even though like the weird kind of sonic scream thing at the opening was like, felt like Superman 4 made up powers territory. I was just like, all right, I'll go with it. Because if I didn't buy into that in the opening, then I wasn't going to.
Yeah, it was going to be hard.
It would have been a longer 4 hours. You know? But yeah, you know, I don't like the black suit. I think in theory it's cool and it looks cool, but I think you need that pop of color with that lineup. Otherwise everything just looks kind of muddy. But I mean, you know, him showing up and just being Superman, like I was surprised at how much from Snyder's version was in the Whedon version and how much I realized, like watching it, wow, a lot of the stuff that actually worked in the Whedon version was from the original cut.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. With both of you, with Cyborg, easily. I think they're taking that the approach you described just now, Ebe, is what they're doing with Mortal Kombat, where they're introducing a new main character and having that person's journey drive the picture. And I think it would have been a really it would have been interesting to see that happen with the Snyder Cut. And then just spending more time with Cyborg and really allowing us as an audience to understand his capabilities in this particular world was dope as hell. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got inklings of how powerful he was, but we kind of centered it around his relationship with the mother boxes versus his relationship with our technology. And in this one, having him, you know, go into that digital world and break it all down with his father telling him everything was like, oh shit, he is God level on Earth.
And it's such a cool visual representation the way they did it too, where he's walking around as himself before the accident in that space. And it really gave, I think, Ray Fisher an opportunity to show his range, you know, and it was such a, I mean, if anything, for good or bad, the fact that this version exists to show off, to showcase what he was doing in that movie, I think is like worth it in and of itself, you know?
Absolutely.
Because he really got the short shrift, man. I think everybody agrees on that.
And
I agree with you. I think that I agree with you that he should have been like the throughput for the film. He should have been the focus. And I thought about that as I'm watching it. I was like, well, by the time it got towards the end, I was like, well, they kind of could have used him like they used the Hulk in the first Avengers, how you kind of think the Hulk is just this one, you know, oh, he's just the mass smash name. But it's like, oh no, he was part of the plot. Like Loki wanted him the whole time. Like the this is the whole thing. This is what we want. And I was hoping that, I was like, well, by the time it got towards the end, I was like, well, Cyborg really could have been that the whole film. Like, oh no, no, we have this little, we have this guy, and we're gonna use him. Like if Darkseid or Steppenwolf could have said, oh no, we're using this guy. This is the point. Like we're gonna use him to connect the other boxes. We need him to do to make the unity. We need him for that. So ta-da, this is all part of it. And just as far as him being a human being and showing him, and it, and like you said, when he was when he uses powers to help somebody, it wasn't like I'm going to use my powers to physically help somebody that's in physical danger. It was just like, I'm going to help these people who need it, period. Like I can have this power. So it wasn't just Superman like catching the lady who's falling out of the building. No, it was somebody who's like seeing somebody in, you know, mental trouble, you know, financial trouble. And then like, oh, I'm going to use this power because I can.
And that ties right back into more of his backstory, right? When he got in trouble. University for altering one of his classmates' grades. Like this guy has been a hero before the powers. That's just who he is. So so definitely love the upgrade for Cyborg. For me, the second upgrade I loved was Flash. Definitely getting more Barry is hilarious for me. And then there's always going to be this issue with the choreography for the running. The running's just weird, bro.
I think what they did was like they sat down with like some kind of motion coach, right? And they said, okay, it's going to be a cross between speed skating and like, you know, Olympic lap swimming or something. And he was like, got it. And then what he did was just flailing around.
He flailed.
And it's wild to me because like, they put those actors through. I mean, look what Henry Cavill has gone through to become Superman, right? Yeah. That man eats like 10,000 calories a day. He's even trained by himself and shit. Like, and so I'm like, well, they had to do something with Flash, and that was the net result. Like, that's wild to me. That's like,
flail.
Yeah. And you know, well, we'll get into this too, but like, the decision to make the fastest man alive represented almost entirely in slow motion was such a bizarre choice in this movie. But you know, I'm sure we'll talk about the slow-mo in general.
That did work for me, the way they handled speed with the slow motion, because what it worked for me more so in Wonder Woman's fight scene where they gave us both sides of her speed. So to see the slow-mo with the bullets coming at her, and okay, so that's moving in slow motion and you're still seeing her move at normal speed, is like, oh, okay, she's quick as shit. And then when they give us everyone else's normal speed and she's blocking bullets and super speed, it's like, again, anytime they put her in a fight scene, all the light bulbs going. Like, everyone's paying attention. Like, we got to get this shit right. Because their fucking fight scenes are ridiculous. But so I enjoyed just seeing him use his powers for time manipulation. Just, you know, an inkling here or there. Because in that, that final fight scene, when he missed his window and then tapped into the speed force and rewound it, I was like, oh, okay. All right. And he did it earlier when they revived Superman, but we didn't really see it play out that way in the first one, in them reviving Superman. So, I mean, to kind of drop those.
That's right.
For them to kind of drop those inklings driving us towards Flashpoint. Like, yeah, we're watching Barry play around with rewinding time to change the outcome.
Right.
This is gonna have an adverse effect in the next film, guys. Like, don't count on Barry doing this shit. It's about to fuck things up.
And what a difference between him essentially saving the day at the end of this movie versus the Whedon version where he's just pushing a truck.
he's saving the Chernobyl family, right?
Yeah. What did you guys think about that? Because I understand the reasoning behind putting like a human element in the Whedon version. So you get a small microcosm of what they're fighting for, right?
Go on.
And we didn't have that in the Snyder version, but I didn't find myself missing it because I'm like, well, you know, when you have a movie with all these characters, I don't really care about this family. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to assume they're trying to save the world. I don't need like that touchstone, I guess.
I think one of the reasons you didn't miss it is because we understand the intent. The execution was so bad that it made zero sense. Why is this family spending however amount of time they are trying to keep the parademons from getting in? And why can't the parademons get in? Like, what are we doing here? I don't understand what's going on there.
Yeah.
This family is keeping parademons at bay. And for what? Like, what? Like, I didn't understand any of that shit.
I think it wasted, that first version was 2 hours long. I think it wasted every minute of screen time that it would happen. Because when you see this version, you realize you really don't need it. And I forgot they were in it. And so almost the very end when Barry starts like reversing time, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, this was the family part. Like, I literally realized it as I'm watching it. And because of that, you know, first of all, I thought that was hokey to begin with. And you don't need to show, oh, he said they're the Justice League are saving this one family. No, they're saving the world right now. Like, we don't have to show, you don't have to show this little family thing. You can actually put the Flash to work, which is what he did in, you know, the Snyder Cut. He actually went to work. And I thought that was the most important. Like, don't have him pushing a car. Like, come on. Like, you know, I know there's some symbolism, but it was just, it showed that it was one of those things that Whedon or the studio put in to try to kind of copy the Marvel thing of having like a family in peril, and they kind of do kind of thing, but they always make fun of it. Like, you know, Marvel kind of, you know, always makes fun of it. And in the Whedon version of this film, it was just like, it's taking up my time. you only have 2 hours for this movie. I mean, meanwhile, I mean, of course, Zack Snyder got four hours to do.
Right.
But, you know, we'll talk about that later.
Right. Yes, we will. Yeah. We most certainly will. I was rejoicing when I heard the family wasn't in it, honestly. I watch Heavy Spoilers, Emergency Awesome, sometimes New Rock Stars. So when they were doing the early, you know, reviews, the spoiler list reviews, and they mentioned the family wasn't in it, I was like, okay. That's really all I need from this cut. Wait, it's four hours and you took the family out? Let's go. Let's go. Let's give me this. Pop the popcorn now. Let's go. I'll pay for this. Yeah, let's go. But yeah, they were just super annoying. So what were some of the other things that you were impressed by between the two cuts? People mentioned music. Of course, we don't have the digital chin. What were some of the other things that you were impressed by between the two cuts?
I was mostly impressed by Steppenwolf's face,
yeah,
which I hated in the first film. I mean, you can think whatever you want to think about the suit. I thought the suit wasn't bad. I thought it kind of had a cool, like, I liked the way they, the VFX team did the coloring on the suit. I thought the lighting on the suit was incredible.
It was.
Endpoints. So I was like, oh, the suit, you know, I don't care about the design for the suit, but the way they rendered that suit was incredible. Steppenwolf's face, though, in the original film, I hated, and that's all I could talk about. When people ask me, I say, I literally feel like I'm watching a video game. I hate this guy's face. You lost me as soon as they lost me as soon as I saw Steppenwolf's face. Like, seriously. Like, I was just like, no. They didn't have enough time to, they didn't have enough money and time to give this guy like a realistic kind of looking face to me. So that was number one. Like, once you got Steppenwolf's face correct, once he looked like an actual being and not like right. a representation, that's all, that's what I needed from the beginning. That's what I needed.
What you got, Ibrahim?
Yeah, I agree. I think Steppenwolf, but also like in the broader context of it, like his association with Darkseid and Apocalypse, I think you just needed that because he didn't really have as much of a motivation in the theatrical version, right? He just kind of showed up and you just, all right, well, he's big and ugly. He must be the bad guy, you know?
Right.
But this, it's like he had something he was driving toward. We knew why he was doing it. The other big improvement, I think, was the extended and, you know, with more context, Amazonian scene. I thought that, I mean, they preserved most of it for the theatrical cut, but what a well choreographed like scene with just strong storytelling, and like the odds just keep, you know, I mean, the stakes keep getting higher and higher as it goes. And my only thing with it was, I was like, why are they crushing all their sisters up in this building that like to seal it in when it's got a skylight? That's like how he got in. Like, there's a hole in the roof.
So, but
then it fell into the ocean, and I was like, okay.
Right. So
that part, as they say,
that part. Yeah. So the first time I watched it, I think
the first time.
It...
Yeah. Whoa. We have to address that. You said the first time you watched it.
Yeah. I almost. I mean, collectively, we're around 2 and some change.
Okay. 2.5 I feel like I'm still watching it the first time.
Right. The whole, you watched the whole film more than twice?
Kinda. Yeah. I watched it right through the first time. I was watching
right
it.
Right through?
Yeah. I want to say, okay, so here's what happened.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys are following me on Instagram. So the day it came out, first off, my comic book shop out here, Bridge City Comics, shout out to them. New comics is Wednesday, right? Wednesdays, my schedule's been crazy, so I've been down at the museum. So Thursday, I got to beat the bricks to get down there, or else I'm going to miss some issues. So Snyder Cut drops. Wednesday night, I'm doing some late work, and I said, let me just refresh HBO Max. And there it is, 12:32. Snyder Cut sitting up there, and I'm like, I'm not touching it. No. Because then I won't go to sleep.
Right.
Went to sleep, woke up, you know, head to the comic shop. And I was talking to the guy. I said, you know what? I'm not even rushing to watch it. I'm just, there's a part of me that's just relieved that it's out. It's here. It's accessible. It's for me. I can reach out and touch it. It's there. It's one button away. Okay. All right. So I said I was going to start watching it around 6. No, around 5. Getting other shit done. I didn't start watching until around 7:30 Thursday night. And took a break for dinner. So by the time I got done, it was maybe like 1:30. And I'm like, okay, all right. I got to watch it again. You get ready for the podcast. Just get some more up in me. So I watched part of it the following day. And then before we got started today, I got another 2 hours in. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to do it again. I know it. So yeah, the first time that I watched it,
wow!
I love how they built that scene out so much more, because there was that level of, it was easier for them to communicate the level of seriousness and what it meant to lock that temple. The first time in the Whedon cut, you lock the temple and it's like, okay, Steppenwolf can break out. It's just, not that it's just big stone walls, but this guy is super powerful. He can break out of this. But the way they communicated what this meant for everyone in there, like the exchanges, is like, no, just do it. And it's like, oh, shit. Okay, what's happening now? Why is this any different? Oh, because part of the locking mechanism means the entire temple goes in the fucking water.
Right.
Oh, This is a major right. consequence for your civilization. You're losing right. hundreds of your citizens. Damn, that's crazy.
Side note, is it just like 50 of them up in that temple at all times?
It's a shift. It's a shift.
Yeah, right?
And it's just
like, all right, it's Calliope, your Tuesday. You're up. I got to go.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I'm there Tuesdays and Saturdays.
Right.
The homie, she's there Mondays and Thursdays. Yeah, they just be in there, dog. I
was like, yeah.
This is a staffing issue. Okay, cool.
Yo, can we get some tablets to read or something? It's kind of boring in here. It's just
yo.
We're watching The Box.
Come We're on, watching man. The Box, B, for centuries.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, that's crazy. So yeah, that was definitely something they improved on or expounded on that was just amazing. I mean, along with everything else, you know, building out all the different characters. I'm glad they removed the etchings on the wall in the bar when Batman first confronts Aquaman. We see.
Oh yeah, it's there. Like they swapped it for the Amazonian one or whatever. Yep. Yeah,
they took that crap out. They took out Batman and the Parademon early on.
Yep. Yeah.
They, like a couple things here and there. Flash sketching on the guy's face while he's waiting to see his dad. Like. All the little dumb shit.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, there were things I didn't mind. Guys, I've watched Joss Whedon's a bunch of times. Like, really? It really is something I just put on sometimes while I'm getting.
It's a great background movie. I mean, yeah. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they took out a lot of the bullshit. And it was like, man, and this thing still ended up being 4 hours.
See, you know what I was amazed by is somehow they cut the runtime in half but still like watered it down. I don't know how those two things are possible at once, you know what I mean? You would think it would be more condensed. I mean, honestly, look, I'm not somebody who has been a detractor of Snyder slow-mo because I enjoy it, you know, like in 300 I think it's great.
Absolutely.
And you know, there's some good stuff in Watchmen with it. I felt like in this movie it was so there was so much of it that it undermined the parts where it was necessary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was, he did it so much that it made it not special when it needed to happen. I mean, there was one part when Batman is driving the Batmobile toward the Chernobyl thing. And like he's shooting parademons and a single shell casing just goes tumbling into the air. And we follow that shell casing. I'm like,
for this like thing has its own, seconds.
Yeah. This thing has its own fucking story arc. Like, what do you need that for? You know what I mean? Like, so you know, by the end of it, you're like, man, that shell casing really learned what it meant to be around a bullet. You
yeah,
know? And it took one for the team. Like, it was just unnecessary.
I was wondering about that too when it happened. I was like, is this to show the significance of the size of the shell? Is like, why are we still looking at this right now?
Yeah, and I think, you know, even with the Flash, like, I enjoy certain parts of it. Like, I think the fight with Superman, it was cool because you see Superman turn and look at him and, you know, oh, shit, right?
Let me tell you something. That is a top three moment in whatever cut. When Superman's fucking eyes just cut, I was like, oh, dog, your whole life's over. It's a wrap.
Yeah.
Speed means nothing. You are fucked.
And his face when it happens too, when you see Superman see him, you know, it's great. But like I think, you know, when Flash, I think when someone's moving at super speed and you put everything else in slow motion and they move normally, I think that's the move.
Yes. Right? Yes.
But when you also put him in slow motion, it just takes forever and you're like, all right, hurry it up. I gotta pee or whatever. You know what I mean? So yeah, that was my big takeaway from the slow-mo stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think that.
Go ahead.
I agree. I think Snyder should have used the Snyder slow-mo strictly for Flash. I think Flash should have been the only person that got it, and so that you understand that he's moving so fast that he's the only person we have to slow down. Everybody else, so you saw Wonder Woman moving quickly or whatever.
Yeah.
So we know Wonder Woman can move quickly, but I think Flash should have been the only person that got that slow-mo because. And then, you know, occasionally we see him move so fast that we don't even see him, but we see that slow-mo because it's like, we have to slow it down so you understand what's happening right now. And you can use it, and you can do it in the Snyder way, like, which is really cool and, you know, slow and it gives you emotion and, you know, it takes 3 minutes for somebody's eye to blink or whatever he does.
Right. But. It's like Quicksilver in the Fox universe. I mean,
right,
that
right,
scene in
right.
the kitchen, that's the iconic right. scene. That's right. it. Like, that shit was right. fucking amazing.
Right.
but yeah, as far as in the Snyder Cut, when he's saving Iris, that shit was twice as long as it needed to be.
100%.
That was the yeah. that was the slow-mo usage that was like, oh right. my God. And you stopped to grab a hot dog. Cool. But what? Okay. Just lay her down. And then, right. dude, yeah, that was, yeah.
And part of that, I think, was because it had no emotional connection. Because this is somebody he had just seen. It wasn't like you knew he, it wasn't like he knew Iris or you right. knew that was his girlfriend something. Or, you know, it wasn't like they had the moment where she was like, all right, babe, I'll talk to you later. Or,
right.
you know, this is my new fiance or whatever. They could have had that moment. And then she went away and then she almost died. There was no emotional connection. It was like, oh, this is, you know, this hot woman that I've seen walk out the building and now I'm going to go save her. And I'm going to do it really cool and really, really slowly. And
yeah.
So I think this is probably the time now where I reveal myself as the bad guy on this podcast. Is this the reveal?
We haven't talked about yet. Like, I mean, overall, like, thumbs up or thumbs down, right? Like, yeah. what do you? I think
now's the appropriate time.
I think we know how you.
I think you do. Do we? Let's do a. Shit. Let's do it. Let's do it out of five. Let's do it out of five.
Ooh.
Y'all want to do out of five or out of 10? Is that a five?
Let's
two?
Do out of 10. Let's out do out of 10. Because okay. here's what people don't realize. You give something a 4 out of 5, that's 80%.
It is.
Right? You give it 3 stars, that's a D. That's a great level of D.
Just like you that. Know what I mean? Yeah. Good point.
So, yeah, I like 10.
Okay. out of 10, I'm going to go 7.5 out of 10. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's lower than I expected.
Well, I'm not easily predictable, guys, as much as you like. And the reason I'm saying that is because there are some extenuating circumstances that created this. This is an unprecedented moment, period.
Right.
We would never have gotten this four hours as a theatrical release, period. Right. So I got to chip away at some of that. But the fact that he was able to get these 4 hours, and I want to be able to, you know, have some conversation around that too. It's just a super unique situation that kind of gives him an unfair advantage. So I don't want to just say, all right, he's an 8.5 for this. No. Oh, it's 7.5. It's 7.5. Mm-hmm. Honestly. Yeah.
What do you think? You know, I'm going to make Andre go last for this because I know he's going to have the lowest one. I'm going to give it 8.
Nice.
Based on my, you know, American public school system grading rubric of a solid just B minus.
Yeah. Right?
I think that if it hadn't gone through the tumultuous experience that it did, and we just got a 2.5 hour cut of this movie, I think it would have been much better. I think that would have been the way to view this, optimally, because it would have trimmed the fat and would have cut out like the dumb stuff that didn't need to be there. And just, you know, it's a very bloated movie. Right. But for how I felt after watching it, going like, okay, you know what? I was satisfied. It was, I think he learned from the first two movies in the sense of like what people expect with representation of these characters. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think I would give it a B minus.
Okay. What you got, Dre?
What did you give it?
I gave it 7.5. Now I feel like I'm going to give it a 7.7.
Okay, because I'm making sure that I can use decimal points here.
Yes, you can.
So for me, it's a 6.
Okay.
Maybe a 5.5.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I'm gonna break it down.
Good.
Are we grading on a curve though? That's what I.
Like, actually, you know what? I'm grading on a curve.
Okay.
Okay.
But I'm also grading on two curves.
Okay.
So I have two curves. One curve is the fact that he got the chance. I've seen the other movie. So my mind was already stained. Like, I've never watched that movie again. I never will. That original version. I saw it once. I don't need to see it again. It was a mess. It was a tragic, horrible mess. Okay? I want you all to understand this. Everybody listening, that first version of Justice League was a mess. It was a 2 at best, Don't waste your time. Okay. This one, you're going to waste your time, but it's 4 hours of time, which is, it's bloated. Right. Mm-hmm. So that was my curve, is that I seen part of it. So I kind of was affected by the fact that I've seen it and I've seen some of the really good stuff already. Mm. So that was unfortunate for Zack Snyder. Right.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And I'll say this right now. This is nothing against Zack Snyder. I met him before briefly, really cool guy, really smart guy. Of course he is. And just a really nice guy. Like we talked about 300. I met him at a Watchmen thing and I had seen 300 and we kind of talked about that really quickly. And, you know, I picked up some stuff and talked about it. And he was like, oh, you picked up on that, but whatever. So the other curve that I'm fixing this film on is unfortunately the Marvel curve.
Right.
And when you
that was the curve I was asking about. Yeah.
The Marvel curve is a bitch.
Yeah.
And you can't get, I'm sorry if I cursed, I'm not supposed to.
No.
But if you go against the Marvel curve, then it lowers the score.
Right.
Because their films are so tight, their stories are tight. And even in the not as great Marvel films, you still have fun. The fact that this film was so bloated, by the time I finished it, it took me 2 sittings, right? So I watched the first, my initial reaction was, all right, I even think I told you guys, I'm gonna split it up and watch it. So I started watching it like 11:30 Thursday night or something. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna watch 2 hours, then I'll watch another 2 hours. You know, I think that's fair. I'm gonna break it up, and you know, I know it's broken into parts, so I'm gonna, you know, see how many parts I can get through, and I'll try to, you know, break it up in half. So at about 12:15, which I didn't know, I said, wow, this movie is long as hell. Like, how much have I been watching? And I looked at my watch and I said, I've only been watching this for 45 minutes.
Yeah, I had the same thing happen. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I can do another hour of this. Like, I really don't know. So by the time it got to, and I stopped it at one part, I stopped at the end of part three in the film. And I remember huffing after it. I was like, I guess I got to watch the rest of that, huh? And that was the thing that made me really... So it's bloated, right? This film is bloated. I think if Zach and I sat down in the edit room, I could easily, quickly cut out 45 minutes of this movie.
Wow. Easy.
And it would be a better film.
Agreed, yeah.
But because he had, you know, kind of carte blanche, and I understand it, and I, you know, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's the reason why he got all of it he got. My other example of it being bloated is I'm watching the second half of it. The big fight scene's happening. I'm in the middle of the big fight scene. My wife walks into the room and sits down. And she's like, oh, this is the Justice League movie. I'm like, yeah. So she's like watching it. The movie, the big fight scene ends. The movie ends. It goes to prologue. And she looks at me. She goes, so this is still going on? This movie is still going on? So we're watching the prologue. And we get into the middle of the Joker scene, and she says, okay, I can't do this anymore. And I said, why the fuck is he still talking? Why the... Part of my language, listeners, why the fuck is the Joker still talking? What? Why?
Why is he still talking? Cackling?
Right.
Why is he still talking? What is he talking about? Like... So, all right, I gotta cut this short, I know. But so my review good. Is, and I have a list. I was taking notes during the first 2 hours of this movie. But the cursing, I know I just cursed. The cursing didn't need to be there. Specifically,
it served no purpose, right?
It served no purpose specifically. And I was only give it one purpose, one time when I thought it worked. And that was Cyborg saying "fuck the world."
Yeah,
okay. That was it. Because
what about during the hostage situation?
That served no purpose.
Really?
I thought the robbers didn't have to curse because we've seen hostage situations in other superhero films. You don't have to say "get the f down, move, get the f out the way." You don't. And I've said "f," I know, whatever. But you didn't need it. You didn't need it. And so when they were cursing at the kids or cursing at the hostages, I was like, I hope this isn't what we get our R rating for. I hope they didn't just throw us a bunch of F words and say, "Oh, cool." Well, outside of the first shot, right.
I think part of the R rating was Wonder Woman painting the fucking bank walls with those dudes' brain matter, which was like, what a weird thing, right? Like, I mean, there's literally like a piece of brain, like probably just slopping off the drywall, and this little girl says, "Can I be like you when I grow up?" And she's like, "You can be anything." Splat. You know, like what? That was a wild choice.
That was a wild choice. So it's those choices. And I'm not gonna go through my entire list right now because I know we got more things to cover. But it's kind of based on that. It's kind of based on my rating and as I think about it, I am giving it a 5.5. But okay. It's kind of rated. It's based on the fact that it was bloated, the fact that they spent. It was the 4-hour time really affected how I felt about the film because I felt like I got some of the character development that I wanted from the original cut, but then I got these long shots of the bullet falling, the shell casing falling forever. I got these some really weird scenes, like the prologue seemed like a separate movie, and then I got some like corny stuff that it's also me. I understand that stuff like some people call me the Martian Manhunter. Yeah.
I really wish that would have been delivered better. Just
right. It's those like, things.
It's like, bro, who calls you that though?
Who calls you? Who are the
nobody
who,
knows first who all, you?
That's what I'm saying, bro. Yeah. You're here in the hiding. Who are the some people that call you that, my guy?
That's like when you introduce yourself. Yeah, some people call me Smooth Daddy B or whatever. It's like you call you that.
Yeah,
nobody calls you that.
You call you that all the time, and it's never caught on. It's never caught on there.
So those are just a couple examples of why. Yeah, and so for the rest of this pod, I will be the movie guy.
Would this have
That's all better? Valid though. That's all valid for sure.
Would this have worked better as a miniseries versus the full 4-hour film? Would you have liked this in pieces? Would that have improved the experience?
Probably not, because it still had the same bloat. But okay. I thought they were doing the miniseries thing. So yeah. even when I went to HBO Max to watch it, I was like, wait, it's all together? And I was kind of confused. And I was like, oh, I thought they were doing as a miniseries. I thought I was going to watch like, the first. That.
Yeah.
Right. And so I was like, I thought I was going to watch a part and then I have to go to the next part. And I thought that's what it was going to be. But I think, I mean, maybe it's hard to say now, but the parts are separated. Now, somebody broke down how long the parts are. I saw it online, like how each part was like about 32 minutes. And there were some parts are like 14 minutes, but the prologue's 19 minutes long.
Yeah.
So I don't, there was just so many things in here that fought against my viewing pleasure.
Yeah, it wasn't
the Marvel curve.
It wasn't paced well. Like it didn't have, you know, I mean, I'm sure it has a 3-act structure in it, right? But like when you break that up into 6 uneven parts and it's kind of weird, it's like it didn't feel like it had the pace of like a story that gets you up and then down and then up and then down. You know what I mean? Like it was just kind of like kind of flat with a few punctuations, and I think maybe it was a case of like whoever edited it. I don't know. I imagine Snyder had a lot to do with the editing of it. Yes. Like
and
I think he was probably too close to it and couldn't see it for what it was anymore, maybe, like, and you know what I mean, when you just can't divorce yourself from like your baby enough to you know see it objectively. I don't know. But the Marvel comparison is definitely a thing, and I don't do it in a sense of like, you know, oh, it needs to fit this formula that they do or anything, because I know that's what a lot of people put it to, right?
Unfortunately.
But I think more like what Dre's saying about it, it's like they have a way of capturing the heart and the feeling of these characters,
right?
And they're not straight adapting a comic, right? Like they're taking bits and pieces of all of them, but they keep it true to the core of what that character is, and the way that you feel when you leave reading those comics is the same when you leave reading when you're watching those movies,
right?
And it was much more of a representation of those characters for everybody,
right?
Whereas for whatever reason Warner Brothers put all their eggs in one guy's basket for his very specific view that is not the general like zeitgeist view of these characters. And I think that's where the polarization comes from with his version of the, you know, the movie characters and stuff. So
how do we feel about the Snyderverse in its totality? So you mentioned the epilogue a couple of times, and I did want to carve out some time to talk about that. So
epilogue. I kept saying prologue.
he left a bunch of cliffhangers in here, you know, Lois's pregnancy, how that ties into the second and third parts of Justice League for him.
Now, did we get definitively that she is pregnant, or was it just like we saw that there was a test in her?
So there were two things. We saw that there was the test, and then someone pointed out in that final scene at the Kent farm, Lois is actually carrying a baby basket, a carrier, up the steps as she's going into the house. So it was, and then that kind of recontextualizes the conversation between Batman and Superman when Bruce is like, congratulations. So it's like, shit, is it congratulations on the new kid? Because here she is carrying the bassinet, you know? So, and the fact that we know that that is what was in the game plan initially for parts 2 and 3 of Justice League. So we have that. The escape scene for Lex, we got that. The longer conversation between him and Deathstroke. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, built, they took out the super race at the end. Didn't need that fuck shit. That was the absolute worst way to end any superhero film. Well, that was like some Dakota, greatest American right? hero the, bullshit.
Right. That was comic book. That was a thing directly from the comic book.
Yeah. But I didn't need that. That was just like, no.
I thought it was fun, but the execution of it wasn't great. Like it was, you know,
that was some CW shit.
The way and the way that Whedon writes those characters is like, I don't know. I mean, maybe if he were to do it in comics and he had a little bit more freedom to explore, but like with this, it was very much like citizens, like you know, civilians. I'll take the ones on the left. Like it was like he was writing Superman as like he took basically the version that everyone thinks is so lame and put that in the movie, which drove me crazy because it was like, come on, man. Like, you know, because I love Superman and the way people are always like, ah, Superman's lame always bothers me. And then we get the Justice League movie and it was very much that version.
That version. You know?
I will say there were a couple of lines from the Whedon version that I missed because I thought they were dope. Like, honestly, the part where Superman says to Batman, like, I remember you. Tell me, do you bleed? Like, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah,
like,
because that was a nice pull from BVS.
Yeah, and I thought the dopest line of the entire movie was when Steppenwolf says to Wonder Woman, he's like, ah, an Amazon. My blood still runs, or my axe still runs thick with the blood of your sisters. Like, that is a villain. Like, that's a Hall of Fame villain line.
Yeah.
And that was not in the Snyder version at all.
We definitely could have kept that.
Yeah, that was sick. But I get it. You can't, you know, this is 100% his vision. And he wasn't trying to have any of the, you know, that's like you got your wife remarries and you got some other dude living with your kid. And you know what I mean? Like, you're not trying to, like, they come back for your visitation and they're like, well, you know, Todd says to blah, blah, blah. We don't talk about Todd's house.
Other things in the epilogue, the conversation between Batman and Joker. Batman talks about Harvey dying in his arms and how her dying wish was to kill the Joker. Also giving us the tie-in to the Flashpoint scene where was that Batman vs. Superman? When Bruce has the dream, Flash comes to him and says it's about Lois, you know.
Right.
So there were a lot of just loose ends, especially with just watching Darkseid decide at the end of the film, okay, we got to take this back to the old school. We'll be back. This is where the Ain't Life equation is. Yeah, we're back on task now. There were so many things left open. How do you guys feel about, what are your feelings around the possible Snyderverse? Because now that's the new hashtag, restore the Snyderverse. Right. That's what everyone wants. I feel like because of the reaction, such a positive reaction to this film, it's almost like a layup for Warner Brothers to kind of bring Zack back in and say, all right, so what else do you want to do? Bringing in specifically Jared Leto's Joker is the tie-in, is the linchpin for the relaunch of Suicide Squad, because Harley is still here. Harley is a thread that's being able to carry through all of these, and if you attach this Joker to the Snyderverse, then you've automatically pulled everything together. So he kind of just set the table for Warner Brothers to just have some really great content moving forward. And there's something about the R rating that I enjoy that gives me an indication that we're going to get the violence, you know? Not so much about the cussing. I'm here for the violence. I'm here for the superhero violence. It doesn't have to be like The Boys, but I'm here for the superhero violence. And well, that's
the first shot. The first shot's a gaping hole in Superman's chest. Like,
yeah. And for me, which that's hated, always going to be. You're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
That's always going to be an advantage that DC will have over Marvel in their cinematic universes. I feel like if they are willing to go a little bit darker, a little bit more brooding, a little bit more realistic with the violence, then you're not competing with Marvel. You don't have to compete with Marvel. Just go do your own shit. Just go do that and then live in that space and be, you know, move at your own pace and get these fucking films right. Because animated films, you guys are killing it. And that's all the violence. We get all of the blood. Everyone dies in these animated films. It's crazy.
You know, personally, I don't want it, man. I don't want any more Snyderverse. Like, you know, he came, he did his thing. Like, what I really want is just like a good Superman movie.
Okay.
With Henry Cavill, right? I think, again, Man of Steel is a good movie, but I don't think it's a good Superman movie. I think it's a good, like, First Contact movie. You know what I mean? Like, okay. But I want, I mean, I don't know if you guys have watched Superman and Lois at all.
Not yet, and I want to.
Not yet.
It's great. It's really good. And it's really, I think, nailing the character. And it's showing that, like, you can have good Superman live action stuff, you know, that doesn't need to be, like, I don't know, man. I mean, I it's hard to, you know, get into it if you haven't seen it. And, I don't want more people with it, the listeners. But, like, it's just a good depiction of the character. And I think it shows what is possible in the movies. And I think that, like, I think that the depiction of Captain America in the Marvel Universe, like, is a way to show. Nobody thinks Captain America's lame after watching those movies.
No, you know? No. So, that made him that much cooler.
Yeah. So I think, you know, you can really, I just want to see a standalone story with Superman. And I know Henry Cavill has signed on to do like 3 to 5 more
good
appearances as Superman. Good. This was like last September. So this is recent. And I think the Ta-Nehisi Coates movie is probably going to be, what is it? Is he Val Zod, I think is his
yeah.
name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the Earth 2 Superman. Because I know what they're doing is they have their DCEU, and then they have stuff like the Batman and Joker, which are like going to be Black. Standalone. Yeah. So, you know, I think it would be dope. And they could tie that in too. I mean, you could have two Supermen flying around, you know, like there's going to be a Supergirl movie and stuff too. Yep. So, but yeah.
Who's the villain? Who's the villain in the Superman film that you want?
Brainiac.
Oh.
I mean, that's like, we've yet to see that on the big screen. You know what I mean? They've done it on TV, but I think you could do a really good Brainiac story. Shit, bring Cyborg into it. Mm-hmm. You know, like his technology with Brainiac. Like, I think there's so much potential, and we don't need it to be this kind of brooding, dark version, you know? And I think that, like, there's a place for that stuff, but I think you need context, right? Like, you introduce Superman in Man of Steel. He doesn't ever get to fully reach his Superman status. And then immediately the sequel, he's sharing all the screen time with Batman and they're enemies of each other. So you don't really get to see Superman doing any like real good other than just being like this weird benevolent, like I'm floating above a people on a roof when it's flooding or, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's depicting them as him as this God, you know, and it, and then you go to Justice League where he's dead until the last 15 minutes of the fucking thing. So it's like, give us just a good Superman movie. And I think it's a good opportunity to kind of reset, clear the slate. You know what I mean? Because they've already established they're not able to do what the Marvel Cinematic Universe did, you know?
And yeah.
So play into that and do your own thing is the way I see it. But
Dre, what are your feelings on the Snyderverse?
It's interesting because I didn't realize how much I cared about Superman as a character until they started really fucking him up. And that's in my opinion. I just think that especially when you have when you have Superman as dark and brooding, and to me he was Batman in every film that he's been in, except maybe part of Man of Steel, he felt like Batman's character. And I think that he has to be, like you said, the Captain America of the, you know, he doesn't have to be corny. He's this guy who has these, you know, beliefs, and, you know, he's trying, he's doing what he can for the people. But I wouldn't mind a Snyderverse, but I don't know if I could last through it. Like I think if you handle these characters the same way you handle every character, and to me they paint all these characters are pretty much painted the exact same way. They don't have enough difference to be a film on this or an entire universe, because you can't get one, you're barely getting one character right. I think maybe Flash.
I didn't think you're. I don't know about Wonder right.
Woman. I don't know about Wonder that. Woman.
Everyone, yeah, all, with the exception of Flash, is tortured. Everyone.
Everybody.
The Flash is a tortured soul.
And Flash is a tortured soul, but he carries it differently. And that's what makes him a different character in this film, which is why when you see him, you kind of brighten up. Because, yeah, he's tortured. Like, his father's in jail. And my wife came in when she was like, who's that guy? Later on. And I was like, oh, that's his father. His father's in jail for killing his mother. But you do it. And she was like, oh, okay. Like, because he carries it differently. And so Everybody doesn't carry their pain. Everybody carries their pain the same way. Everybody kind of speaks the same way. Everybody's dark and brooding. You can't have Superman dark and brooding. And I have one more question. Why the hell did they bring Superman back to life? He whoops their ass. Because they brought him back to life, they brought back the mother boxes. But then they just stopped and was like, all right, Superman's not down. Why would you do that? Like, that's the biggest hole for me in this movie. Like, you brought Superman back to life.
Right.
But then when he skated, you let him skate.
Did they have a choice, though?
Like... Yes. You know what the choice was?
What?
The choice was the scene that was cut from the film, which was Flash telling Batman that Lois was the choice, was the key.
Was the key.
So you have to do something, right? Like, to me, that's one of the biggest holes in the film, is that I'm like, you spent all this time, you risked everything to bring Superman back, and then you just let him go.
So I feel what you're saying. Like, he left and then there was no follow-up.
There was no follow-up.
Have another conversation with him.
Right. Somebody just, go talk to Lois.
If he pops up, he pops up. If not, right. Yeah. I feel you.
And hey, Diana, go talk to Lois. Maybe she'll talk to you. Hey, so-and-so, go talk. Somebody go try to figure this out. Somebody go get his mama.
That's where Martian Manhunter would have come into play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Send Swanwick out to the farm, and then he morphs in front of him and says, like, you know, this is about something bigger than us or whatever. But and that's to Andre's point. I don't think that they didn't. If this were the Superman that we know, like, then you just know Superman's going to do the right thing.
Right.
We don't. They haven't built that version of him. No. So they were kind of banking on our just general, like, understanding of him doing the right thing, you know?
Right.
Good point. Right.
Because Superman lands and he sees, and you must be Alfred.
Yeah.
And then there's enough time, but there's no, and I know there was a part cut out of that, of that scene. I know for a fact that they had more of a conversation, but it's those types of things that make me worried about a Snyderverse, is that you're not giving these characters their full character portrayal. You're not developing them as their own one person and you get that once again, Marvel curve. You get that on those characters. You get even if you're in the movie for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, whatever. You get that person is their own person. You understand that character is that character. They speak differently. They address an issue differently than that person. Yeah. And I think that's how Superman should have been in this film. And I'm not the biggest Superman character fan, but you have a dark and brooding cyborg. You have a dark and brooding Batman. You have a dark and brooding Wonder Woman. Everybody's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, it can be a dark world, but damn it, everybody has to address it differently. And that's why the Snyderverse, to me, collapses on itself.
Yeah, I think.
Because of the character.
Yeah, and with, you know, again, the Marvel curve, like, look at Civil War, right?
Right.
We all knew what those characters, yeah, they were like, you could pose that question and we all had a pretty good idea of which character was going to fall on which side of that line.
Facts.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And with this, you don't know who's going to do what, because, you know, part of it is because we didn't spend several movies with them yet. But like, you know, I think it just, again, that just kind of speaks to the fact that like a lot of this stuff wasn't earned yet. Like you didn't, like when Superman died in the comics, like that was in the early 90s. So that's what, like, 60 plus years of Superman being exactly. in the cultural zeitgeist. When you kill him in the movie, he was in one movie before this.
Yeah.
So it's like, you didn't earn that yet. It's kind of like in the Dark Knight trilogy when like he had been Batman for like a year and then he's like done. And you're like, wait, what? Like I thought, you know what I mean? So yeah, I think it's a lot of like rushing to try to do certain things that feel like big moments from the comics, but it's like, it's not the same. You can't do it that way, you know?
I'm so glad we're having this discussion. You guys are really giving me some really great perspective. I am a huge Batman fan, so dark and brooding, however it comes. Oh yeah, give me more of that shit. But you're right.
And it works with Batman. Absolutely.
Yeah. It works with Batman. Yeah.
But you're right. Like what I love about Batman and Superman's interactions is that Boy Scout shit. I love that Superman is a Boy Scout. And then on top of that, he's not just a Boy Scout. He's a Boy Scout and what? Like, he's with the shits.
I think the thing about Superman too is like the Boy Scout thing, a lot of people go like, well, he's a goody two shoes. That's what that means. Like, no. It means that he's an optimist.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And it's that optimism that propels him. Whereas Batman's, it's his like certainty that everyone is bad. Right. And you need them to offset each other.
Right.
Because, and that's why people like Batman so much. Like, yeah, aesthetically he's cool and shit. But like, also I think that a lot of us are nihilistic about things even if we don't say it or admit it on the surface, right? And and Batman makes us like go, yep, and if I was rich and could beat the shit out of people, like that would be me, right? But Superman gives us that ideal. And I think, you know, somebody said this to me recently. I was like, I never thought about it like that. Superman being that idealist, that optimist, right? That paragon, that example, people often don't like him because he makes them feel bad about who they are, right? And I was like, god damn, that's true. Because like I don't drink, right? Never have. I'm not like against it, it just wasn't for me. But people would like not want to kick it with me if they knew they'd be drinking, because they don't want to be around the sober guy while they're getting, you know, three sheets to the wind, because it makes them feel like, oh man, I'm fucking up my life or whatever. So like and when my friend said that, I was like, damn, he's right. Like, I think that is why people don't really vibe with the character. So you need the two of them to kind of play off each other. Right? And everything is just like, yeah, this sucks. It's like, well, that's how you get BVS, you know?
And I'm telling you, man, it's magic. When it's done right, it's magic. It really is.
Yeah.
Especially like in the animated films, because Superman gets teased for being that Boy Scout. But at the end of the day, can you fuck with him?
Right.
No, he's shutting the conversation down. That's it. That's, I don't approve of this, and I'm going to show you that I don't approve of it. And now, it doesn't matter how much money you have,
right?
Your hands are tied. And there's that. I've wrapped an entire fucking lamppost around you, and I'm taking the villain to fucking to fucking Arkham, where you can't kill them. Like, yeah.
Right. I loved when he showed up and he said, not impressed. That was dope. That was a dope entrance. Because in the Whedon version, he appears off screen. Like, you just see his boots, and he's like, I believe in truth. You're like, like, that's the debut of Superman on screen, is his boots? For real? So I appreciated that, you know, and I guess we saw him when he goes to the ship. And that's the other thing this movie had that the other one didn't. And it was the nice kind of, like, again, callback to Man of Steel, where
First
Light, you know?
Yeah, them walking through the ship and hearing voices from both of his fathers, that was just that was great. That was great shit. So let me ask you guys this. What does this mean for the industry? Last time we talked about Warner Brothers' decision to do all these theatrical releases through the streaming service. The success... Okay, so first off, this shit broke the app both here in the US and China. It had more of an impact on HBO's apps than the season premiere of the final season of Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Yeah, it shut shit down. There were like 2-hour lapses in people being able to watch it once it released.
Ironically, that final season should have been longer. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, first off, that series was 2 seasons short, and yeah, the final season should have been at least 3 episodes longer.
Yeah.
Really fucked us with that one. So, based on the success and, you know, the positive response to the Snyder Cut, what does this mean for the industry? What do you guys think? Are other streaming services going to try things like this? What does this mean for theatrical releases? I know for a fact I'm not watching a 4-hour film in a movie theater, period.
Straight up.
Yeah. Post-COVID. It's not a thing. No. When we go to see Broadway shows, the intermission helps. I'm not doing 4 hours. No. But being able to do 4 hours at my house, oh, never thought about that because there was ever a fucking 4-hour film for me to watch either.
You know what's wild about that too is like, you tell me I got to watch a 4-hour movie, I'm like, bro, 4 hours, but 8 to 12 episodes of a Netflix show drops and I'm binging that shit in a day. Period. So it's like, I don't know what the
period is,
right? Like, it just sounds so absurd to me, but then I'm like, oh, Warrior season 2? Yep.
Maybe because they're paced better than this film was.
I think so. Mm. Because yeah, you can, there are demarcations where you go, all right, I'm going to go get something to eat and we'll let the dogs outside.
Yeah.
Take a piss, right. You know?
and the cliffhanger aspect, because I don't think, also this film didn't have many cliffhangers at all.
Right.
Sorry, but going back to it, the future of the industry. Well, I think it immediately had an effect on HBO's bottom line because they already announced that they were going to separate the different tiers of HBO Max. So there's going to be a more expensive tier where you get to see all of the first run movies. And then there's the one that where you don't get, you have to pay extra for those. So really? I think, yeah. So so even last time we spoke, I said, I think they might flip flop on it. And they did. They did. Mm. Like you have to pay the whatever, you know, $15 version in order. And that's going, I think, after June or after July or something. I think Dune is the first film where, if you don't have the premium version of HBO Max, then you have to pay the extra cost. But
guess who's getting the premium version of HBO Max for Dune?
Right.
What? I'm missing that shit.
I think that on more streaming services are going to try this, hopefully. And then, or even the Disney model where they charge you extra to see, you know,
for the films. Yeah.
For the films, you know, they're, you know, like Mulan and stuff like that. I think that's a way to go about it. I mean, one of the many ways that you can keep developing your, you know, your audience. And I honestly believe that with this, HBO Max and Warner Brothers, they have a chance to kind of develop that DCEU.
Mm, yeah.
And unfortunately, Marvel's doing it already. But with these, you know, with these series.
Yeah.
So since Marvel's already, they're kind of, you know, bringing more people into the, you can bring more people into your universe while people aren't going to theaters, and then you can, you know, give them the big bang when they get to the theater. Mm-hmm. And so that's what they should be doing. And
well, Green Lantern. They did announce Green Lantern is going to be a series on HBO. Gotham PD, I believe, is also going to be a series on HBO Max. I can't remember what else. So they are trying to follow that model. And I'm curious to see, you know, how that's going to play out, especially with the CW shows popping.
Right. And that's my concern also, is because Warner has these like competing universes, and they really are competing. To me, they're competing universes because CW has, like, I'm sorry to say it, but they like what I like to call the pop shit. And mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, the kitty kind of family friendly. That's what I kind of feel. I'm not sure about Superman and Lois yet, though. But and then they have, you know, but then they have, you know, maybe they'll have this Green Lantern thing. So with the Green Lantern, that's also my question, but I'll ask it later. But the Green Lantern series, will it follow the dark and brooding?
Or I think it's going to be more Watchmen. Yeah, I think it's going to be more Watchmen type shit.
Watchmen type.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting too is like, I think that all the Disney Marvel stuff is like very obviously shared universe, even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Because you have the crossover actor and stuff.
Yep.
With the CW stuff, they have very specifically like their Arrowverse, right? Yep. Right. And then Superman and Lois is interesting because while he first appeared in Supergirl, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which was an alternate universe or within alternate the dimension Arrowverse. Within the Arrowverse, right?
The Arrowverse.
But then Superman and Lois is treated like, I mean, it's beautifully shot. The production value is way higher.
Wow.
It looks more like a show that would be on like AMC or something like that.
Oh, wow.
It's not the corny, like, you know, kind of CW vibe you're used to where everything looks like a set. Could tell, like, you know, they're like in the middle of Star City or Central City or Metropolis, but it's like downtown Vancouver and everyone knows. you know,
it's Portland.
Right. So I'm curious to see what they do moving forward with other shows, because this one, like I said, it's a way higher production value, and it's like, it's got I think it has a clearer focus and vision of what it's trying to be in a way, like, cause it doesn't seem like it's supposed to cross over with all this other stuff.
They established their multiverse already. So there's space for everyone to just play and do what they need to do.
And actually there's a multiverse within this show. I won't spoil it, but I think you are really going to love it. Ambush, like
I'm hopping on it this week.
I think you're gonna dig it a lot. I actually, you know, Andre, you might like it too, because it's a more mature version of that show, that type of show, without being like corny, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. The premise is essentially like Superman has two sons who are 14, and you know, so he's trying to balance being a father with being Superman. And you know, there's
back in the hometown though, right?
Yeah. And at first I was like, man, you're gonna give me another show set in Smallville, come on. But the reasoning for doing it is smart. Like, essentially he kind of moves back there to take over the farm, and then there's also Morgan Edge, who's like a villain in the DC universe. You know, he's one of the corporate Lex Luthor type of villains.
Okay.
He's got some kind of vested interest in Smallville, and the there are people who live there who are like, he's going to bring jobs. He's, you know, the news media is trying to make it, you know, so they're kind of pulling from real life a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And then so Lois is on a mission to like uncover why he's in Smallville, you know, like what this guy's doing, because she knows that he's up to no good. So, but yeah, the production value is pretty good. There's some great Superman scenes in it. Like there's a villain that's really interesting and compelling that is a familiar to us, but a different version. And that's kind of where the multiverse stuff comes in. So yeah, check it out.
And they're what are they, like 3 or 4 episodes in at this point?
Three episodes. Yeah. Okay. The first one is like a double length one, and then the other two are just regular. But yeah.
I'm sold.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting used to having multiple Supermen on screen. Cause for a while it's like you just get one every 20 years or whatever. You know what I mean? This is like, all right, you know, it's a new dawn. We got TV, we got movies, we got comics. It's all over the place. So.
Christopher Reeve was a hard act to follow, but Henry is killing it.
Yeah, and that's why I just want him to be, you know.
I was like, y'all, you've done it. Yeah. This is it. This can be Superman for me. Cool. Yeah. Great. Let's move on. We've established him. Lock him in for however long he needs to be locked in. Give him all the money he wants. Let's keep him.
Right.
Let's make him happy and just get some good stories around this guy. I love watching Superman.
Agree. And I try not to concern myself with like these people in real life at all, but everything I see, just, you know, that I through osmosis of the internet, like he seems like a decent dude.
Yeah.
And he cares about the character, which I like. So
yeah.
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 We'll probably find out tomorrow he's racist or something.
God damn it. Oh my God. All right. So,
to be in a fucking bagel box talking about, you're not my dad. You're not Jor-El. I don't know why I'm doing the Denzel finger with that.
Oh my God. So,
you saying before from Krypton? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah. Okay, so we got a review training day at some point. You know? We got to do a training day rewatch. Okay. So before we close, any final thoughts? If you could holler at Zach, what would you say at this point? Job well done, sir. Job well done with some notes.
Yeah, it would immediately be congratulations. Happy you got it done. Here are my edits. I'm very happy that this version is better than the original version. Mm-hmm. Even though the original version was shit. And so I'm not saying he didn't have far to jump, but you know, he made a better film. I mean, his idea was a better film. And I also don't know if he also had the benefit of time, which was the issue with not only Justice League, but also with Batman versus Superman, is that he said even back then he didn't have enough time. And he kept saying, oh, I have to change something. And, you know, Warner was telling him that he had to put it out when he had to put it out. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't make these adjustments that he wanted to make in Batman versus Superman. And then the same thing happened with Justice League. And, you know, he ended up, you know, bowing out. But, you know, I mean, I still have some issues. And can I just jump in real quick and just my Green Lantern question? All right. So if the Lantern was there in the first big fight and the Lanterns kind of watched the universe, correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah.
So why did they come back for this big one?
I had the same question about Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. She's established in this universe under Wonder Woman 1984 that she's been around all this time. How do you miss this battle? Even more so, like with the Lanterns, your responsibility is this planet, is this sector. Where are you, bro?
Like, yeah, Earth has three Green Lanterns. Like,
right,
even time, pretty much.
Right.
So that was my overall, and because I had read that there's a big cameo at the end, and I was like, and then in the beginning when I see the big fight, I see the Lanterns. I'm like, okay, at some point they're going to kind of introduce whoever he thought was going to be the next Green Lantern. It's going to be crazy because he's going to show up, and maybe he'll show up in that I'm not impressed kind of scene.
Right.
And then I was like, wait, aren't they? I was like, you introduced them in the beginning of the film, so you already told us that they're involved. Why aren't they here? And I don't know what that reasoning was. But
I heard something about Snyder wanted to have John Stewart
instead
of Martian Manhunter at the end or something. I don't know if that would have superseded the Swanwick as Martha Kent as Martian Manhunter bit or not.
Well, he already had that storyboarded. They had already shot that. He just didn't finish it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
He just didn't finish that Martian Manhunter Kent part of it. But yeah.
I'm assuming it was kind of like, you remember in Endgame, or no, in is Infinity War? No, I guess it was Endgame when they say to Captain Marvel, like, where were you? And she's like,
I have things to do.
Off plan. Right. Yeah.
Shit. I'm assuming it's kind of like that, because the sector that contains Earth is, like, I think the entire, like, galaxy or something.
Right.
So, you know, or several galaxies. So it could be that they were off world, you know, they didn't all have a Superman kind of thing. So I had to go handle business. But
so John Stewart, there was an Easter egg for John Stewart in the Snyder Cut when they dropped that newspaper right after Lois grabs her coffee and she's walking to give it to the cop. The cop who ends up being the actor that was Jimmy Olsen.
They used him again in the Whedon version. He was the guy at the sign-in when Flash goes to visit his dad.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Oh. Damn. So
they really want to keep him around.
That's tough. So the newspaper that they dropped was about company looking for an architect, and that was supposed to be a nod to John Stewart's day job.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he was an architect. I thought he was in the military or something.
Yeah, apparently that's what that was supposed to be. You mentioned something about like the production schedule that Zack Snyder was facing, and how we wouldn't have, you know, right here, he had the luxury of taking however much time he needed. Right. They gave him like another 20 mil to knock this shit out. Like,
right.
So I was, I follow Lee Unkrich on Clubhouse. He has this room where he discusses The Shining specifically. He's about to release a book. And he said in some of his later conversations with Stanley Kubrick, he started production on The Shining and the story wasn't completed.
Right.
Like, there are some of the scenes, some of the earlier scenes in the film that just weren't even written until maybe like the last 2 months of shooting. And Jeff Garland asked him, he was like, well, what was the rush? Why did he have to start? And he was like, the studios were like, no, we have a start time. You need to finish by this time. We got to get this shit rolling. Same thing with the actors that had signed on. It was like, we got this window that we got the actors for. Right. We got to get fucking rolling on this shit. You just can't be. So it was really interesting to hear that, especially about a film that just seems like, when for me, like, that film is just fucking amazing. There's so much thought and depth put into different layers of what's going on in that film. And then to be like, yeah, we started this shit and he was still figuring it out. I was like, oh, okay, it's pretty tight.
That's how it was with the Bourne films, the third Bourne film.
Really?
But Paul Greengrass film, the film that kind of feels like it has a story. They weren't, mm-hmm. they didn't have a full script. And I know that because I knew somebody who worked on that movie, and without saying who he is, he would get script pages like for like, let's say 3 days from now and say, okay, it's Monday. This is what we want to shoot on Thursday.
Holy shit.
So let's get that together. And then he would do his job and kind of figure that out. And then sometimes it would be Wednesday and it'd be like, all right, remember those pages we gave you Monday? We're swapping them. This is what, and this wasn't like an actor. This was production. And so he was like, and so while he's working on this film, he said, yeah, we don't have a script. He said, I think the last time I saw a script, it was like 40 pages long. Oh, but when you watch that film, you can't tell that there was no beginning, middle, or end. They barely had a beginning to that film. They definitely didn't have an end. Because I remember when they figured out the end, and I happened to be with him when he got a call, and he was like, I got to bounce. And he was like, because what he was doing was making that ending happen. And he made that ending happen in the movie.
Holy shit.
Otherwise, they had none.
Now I got to go back and rewatch it. That's the one where we get the full backstory.
Get the full backstory. You have the big chase scene in New York.
Yeah.
So you can imagine not having a production set for that. And it's a real chasing in New York City.
Holy shit.
But I'm sorry. I like totally like threw
no,
off your...
No, that's, no, no. That was great information. That's going to be a clip within itself. Thank you very much for that. Ibrahim, final words.
Yeah, I think overall, when you look at the big picture of this, right, there were some net positives.
Mm-hmm.
They raised a bunch of money for suicide prevention.
Yeah,
you know, $70 million budget got re-injected into this project, which put a lot of people back to work during COVID.
Facts.
And then, you know, people got a 4-hour thing to do while we're still trying to stay inside, at least, you know, for the most part. So, I think overall it's a good thing. I don't like that there was a lot of vitriol online from the people who were supporting it.
Mm.
And I don't like that there was equally a lot of vitriol online from the people who were naysaying it. Right. Yeah. Because I'm like, yo, if I don't want to watch something, I just don't need to talk about it. And it's like, that's been one of the number one things for me, is like, there's a lot of people who just love to get on Twitter and be like, the Snyder Cut. You can't get me to watch 4 hours of anything, blah, blah, blah. But it's like those same people like the dumbest shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, let everybody like what they like. You know what I mean? Like, you can just enjoy it in your own pocket of the world. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it happened. I'm glad we got to see it, you know. Maybe it will be a signal from to Warner Brothers and stuff, because I mean, if you look at it, like, the movie overall, the story was pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like all they did was mess with it and make it worse, you know. And then like now they have this big mess that they had to put a Band-Aid on and all this stuff. So like maybe they'll learn from that.
Trust the writer, trust the director, trust the creatives.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right.
I hope that anything like this doing well trickles down to comics in some way.
Yeah.
You know, it means we get more action figures. It means hopefully, you know, we get more just like, you know, but I mean, then again, they're always tightening the belt in publishing. So who knows? But yeah, I mean, I'm glad it's here. I'm glad we all got to see it. And, you know, hopefully it has some positive impact moving forward. So
same. I think it's a lesson in the power of, I guess, would this be collective bargaining? and it was like, you know, actually, you know, COVID happening. You're right. This was a very unique branch in time that we had to just sit around and do nothing. And now we got 4 hours of something to engage with.
Yeah. And again, all those people in post-production and stuff that got to work safely, you know, didn't have to be on set for anything. Yeah. I mean, aside from a couple of little additional scenes they shot or whatever, but so I mean, that's a good thing.
All right,
I congratulate them on getting it done, man.
Yeah,
and I just have one more negative thing
to
say.
Do it.
Why with the aspect ratio?
Yeah,
I understand that they were thinking about putting it in IMAX, and a lot of the IMAX theaters have that 4:3. However, some of those shots, especially the flash shots, needed wide. They needed a wide screen.
And I understand, right? Like, if they were to change it to a what do you call that?
To 16:9 or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. They would be trimming the top and the bottom, right?
Yes, right.
So you would be seeing less of it. So on the one hand, I'm glad we got a bigger scope, but on the other hand, it's like, bro, this is only coming out for TV. Like, no one, unless you have a projection screen at home, maybe, you know what I mean? But like, I would say probably at least 80% of the people watching this were watching it on a widescreen TV. So it's like, meet people where they're at, man. Come on now.
Meet them where they're at. Well,
part of it is that they're still trying to consider an IMAX release for this.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, but just even in the shot selection, that's one of the things that, and I was just like, I was kind of disappointed. I saw when the trailers came out and I was like, oh, he's just going for this thing, you know, to kind of make it different. And then I was like, oh, no, they're releasing it like this. I was like, please don't do that. Please don't do that.
I thought it was for the internet. I thought it was for like Instagram and like Twitter, like window ratios or something. But
me too.
Yeah.
And so there, I mean, so, you know, it's, I'm this happy. I mean, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the production. I'm really happy for Ray Fisher.
Yes.
Really happy for him.
I mean, right. In the end of the day, like Ray Fisher, especially after all the shit he went through, because, you know, and look, I don't know the man personally, obviously, but I think that there is something about him standing up for what he believes is right that is indicative of like his character as a person. And and it created a pathway for a couple more people to come forward who were women to say like, we were done wrong as well.
Yeah, so very important.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that, you know, he fell on that sword, like, and he was calling out, you know, institutional racism within film industry, and he was calling out problematic people at the highest levels who are the ones who are in charge of every other project, you know? Yep. So it's like, he at the very least, he put that on people's radar, and he created a pathway for some other folks to come forward. So, you know, that's another one of the net positives of this, even though it has negative connotations for him and his career. Like, I think that speaks to who he is.
He did some real life superhero shit.
Yeah.
Period.
But he saw that stack.
But I think Kevin Feige gonna be like, any of you heroes? tired of your executives cutting you out the film, being mean and nasty, being misogynist. Come on over to Marvel.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much, man. This was amazing.
I feel like real quick,
this forever, man.
That reference is prime for this show specifically. Like,
absolutely.
That's like the concentric circle. Well done.
Yes. Man. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for tuning in. You can make sure you can catch us on all of the streaming services wherever you listen to podcasts, and we will catch you on the next show. All right, fellas. Thanks.
Thank you.
Peace. Perfect. Y'all are the shit.
Man, that was fun. Thanks. That was fun. I can't wait to do this with Mortal Kombat.
Yes, that's gonna be.
I'm sorry, I kept throwing you all over the place.
No, that's literally how our shit goes. Like, you gotta understand. Like, three people is the lowest amount of people we've had on an episode. Like, it's like four, five. Like, yeah. Like, so it's.
But I think.
Yeah,
I think when we get to explore other stuff like that, that's what sets a conversation apart from every other podcast that's going to be talking about this movie. You know what I mean? So I think it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. I'm gonna take a little break. We're back at six.
Six. Yep.
Yeah, we got to do Lupin.
Yeah, I gotta watch some like YouTube refreshers on that. I realized like it's a couple months ago when I watched it, so. I think the conversation will spark all the stuff coming back, but I'm just going to do a little.
Especially a little with Steam coming with all that anime and book knowledge. Like, yeah, that's the shit I want. My relationship with any of that is strictly Netflix. And then fucking Lupe mentioning it. Yeah. That's all.
But I love like the sort of gentleman thief spy espionage kind of aspect to it, which is, you know, James Bond is my shit. So that'll be a nice like.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Did you watch that, Dre?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did. I liked it. Yeah. I liked that. I think it was properly corny in spots, and you know, I like you said, the whole gentleman thief thing was like one of my favorite films is the new Thomas Crown Affair. The one with Pierce Brosnan. So that film is like my please check out the Thomas Crown Affair with Pierce Brosnan in it. That's my shit.
Okay.
It's been a minute. I need to go back to it.
Yeah, that's seen it in a long I actually bought the DVD before I had a DVD player.
It was one of those.
Yeah, like it was like I went to the store, you know, like I don't know if it was like Sam Goody or something. It was like they had the VHS was like $113 and the DVD was like $10. I was like, I'll take that.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so but yeah, check it out. Really, really fun film. And that's Lupin kind of reminds me of that. And I, you know. So it's fun. It's the gentleman thief thing I love.
Bet.
It's good shit.
All right, guys.
All right, fellas. Have a good one.
Hey, you're still here. That's what's up. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate every single listen we get. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on all social media. You can listen to us on the platform of your choice. We are there. And if you're so inclined, please rate the show and write a review. We appreciate all types of feedback from any of our listeners. All right, catch you on the next one. Peace.